Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast with your host, Adam Emmert.
He's not Donkey Kong. He's a drive killer. That's who he is. He's Captain DK.
And Brandon Schultz.
Don't waste your time out on a meaningless play like a PAT or a two-point conversion.
Go Hawks!
Welcome to episode 178 of the Seahawkers podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy, and yes, I really do mean that when I say it, my good buddy, Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmer.
I don't know, man. I don't know if you mean it. I mean, we're so adversarial on this show, and it's clear. It's clear that we're basically doing this just for the checks now. I mean, it's definitely not about not about the friendship.
I mean, over 30 years since kindergarten,
right?
You know, once a week we get together, talk Hawks,
right?
But it's clearly all about keep getting them checks.
Oh, for sure. No, this is about the money now. But, you know, it is. We say that tongue in cheek, but it is great to talk to you today, Brandon, because after that game against the Washington Redskins, the panic meter is high among 12's nation. Holy smokes. I've seen a lot of craziness in some crazy town just coming out of tweets and reactions and posts and just it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we need to talk through this because I think you're right. The panic meter is high. And a lot of that was because of so many different things that went wrong in this past game. And I know I don't want to cover it a lot, but we have to address it. We have to look at it this week. We have to talk through it. And we have to wonder how this team's going to respond coming up on a short week going up against the Arizona Cardinals on the road.
Yeah, this game sets up perfect. It sets up absolutely perfect for the Seattle Seahawks. I'm really looking forward to tomorrow night.
Or tonight by the time most of our listeners are hearing this.
Correct. Yeah. This is now Wednesday afternoon. I literally just got done watching the Redskins game for the first time an hour before recording the show. I procrastinated watching that dumpster fire for as long as possible, but watched it, saw some things. Excited to talk about it. Believe it or not, I am excited to talk about it.
Okay,
it's good. just as fun for me to break down the frustrating stuff as it is the great stuff. I mean, I love this team for even when it's bad,
and that's why we're fans. So there were some things to like in this game, and we'll get to those too. I'm going to talk about how much I hate the Rams, and of course we'll get to some do better and better at life toward the end, and Skip Bayless making another appearance in our Better at Life segment this week.
That he's going to be in your Better at Life, not Do Better?
It is Better at Life than Skip Bayless.
Right.
And he is appropriately related within the story that I will be sharing in the Better at Life segment.
Well, looking forward to that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's say we get into this game that you attended in person, Brandon.
I did.
What happened? You're supposed to bring home the victory. You and our fellow members of the flock were all there at the game. I was relying on you while I was in the stupid sawmill for you guys to pull this out. What happened?
Well,
what'd
for
you
one,
do?
The stupid you do? Rams podcast hosts jinxed us right before the game, talking about how the Texans, every single team that had played the Texans, lost the following week, which was information that I did not need to know going into that game. And I put part of the blame on you for not having the lucky hat there. But I also put part of the blame on DCH's wife, MCH, because she's clearly a jinx and cannot attend games, apparently, because as soon as she went down to go get in line for beers, the defense got a 2-point safety right at the beginning of the game. As soon as she stopped watching, 2 points for the defense. And those 2 points were the points that we had on the board for almost a majority of the game.
Yeah, gosh, that's just crazy in and of itself. Not that there weren't opportunities to put points on the board, but our shankopotamus kicker, you know, couldn't seem to put one through the uprights this game.
No.
And the coach clearly lost confidence in him so much that he wouldn't even attempt extra points.
I don't know if that was the case.
There was some strategy, too. I get it. But like, I think half of that decision was based on what they were seeing out of Blair Walsh.
Before we get there, Adam, I want to talk about just the feeling that I had coming out of this game, because it's one thing when you deserve to lose. And it's another thing when it's so clear who the better team is on the field. Mm-hmm. And there were just so many errors that allowed the game to go the other way.
Right.
You could, I mean, we could talk about who we can pin the blame on for this game. You mentioned Blair Walsh. That's one. You can easily mm-hmm. pin some of the blame on the defense, giving up a late score after the team went up 14-10 late in the game against mm-hmm. Kirk Cousins, who I talked about. Another jinx. I talked about Kirk Cousins being so anti-clutch last week, and then he comes in and gets a stat against the Seahawks. So
I can't recall another time where he's come back and like won the game for the team. Like when Kirk Cousins has won the game for the team.
Yeah.
That is not who he is.
I know.
I can't believe he got a stat.
I jinxed it.
I can't believe he got a stat.
It's right my there. Fault.
Yeah. It's also my fault. Because the Seahawks are now 0-1 on the season when I don't watch the game live.
Ooh.
Yeah. So
that's probably
I'm taking
little,
the blame.
It's a little
I'm
bit of your fault, too.
It is. I did not watch the game live. We lost. It's my fault.
You know, Russell Wilson, you could probably put a little bit of blame on him. He had two picks on the day. Officiating, if you were one that likes to blame officials, there's some officiating calls in this game that you would. I know that. Yeah, I have a hard time going there, too. I'm just saying, you can go pretty deep on the blame on this game. There's lots of different places to look at.
A lot of blame game to go around. I think first and foremost, if I'm going to start playing the blame game here real quick on the team for this game, just pre-snap penalties, man, in holding calls.
Holy smokes.
I mean, that really, to me, I mean, short of Blair Walsh missing kicks, which I think is the next place I would place blame.
I would put that number one, but you can almost flip-flop them to me. Yeah.
Yeah, to me, it's the other way around. You score touchdowns if Jermaine Ifedi doesn't do like 97 boneheaded things right. in a game. Like, I don't know. I have no clue how many drives Jermaine Ifedi has killed this year. He is the DK. He is the drive killer. That's all he is. He's not Donkey Kong. He's a drive killer. That's who he is. He's Captain DK. Dude, I'm so frustrated, and I'm not the only one frustrated. I listened to Pete Carroll's press conference.
Right.
And he is unabashedly positive all the time, right? And usually, you know, when he's disappointed with a guy, he'll say something along the lines of when they ask him a question, you know, let's say they ask him about Jermaine Ifedi, he'll say something along the lines of, yeah, he was out there, really competed, and that's about it. And that's all he says.
Right. It's has a slightly positive tone to it, but he's not going to go negative.
He does not talk about anything specific. And boy, he talked about a lot of things that Jermaine Ifedi was doing specifically and how disappointed he was that we're this far along in the process of his development and still having these kind of mistakes. Pete Carroll's fed the frick up with this guy. He really is. It's sounding like playing time's going to start getting changed around if he doesn't clean it up. He's on the struggle bus hard.
Yeah.
And I can't stand these, especially the pre-snap penalties, man. Holy catfish.
Do you think it's a situation to where once you wait for Jokel to come back, or would you plug in Mark Lewinsky and move Posick over to that right side?
Yeah, I think that's probably the way that goes. I mean, it's going to be, well, maybe you do wait for Jokel to come back. Just wait for Jokel to come back and then you toss Posick on the other side. I could see that as being probably the most likely answer.
If he doesn't get it cleaned up.
Right. I think this Thursday game is his opportunity to show, hey, okay, I'm not going to be the weakest link, whether that's penalties or in pass protection. I'm actually going to pick up my game. It's crap or get off the pot time for him.
It was the right side of the line that really gave Russell some trouble in this game. But to me, Russell didn't look right out there. Did it seem that way to you? And What would you point toward? It just seemed like he was off all day.
Huh, I did not catch that at all. I think he made one bad decision. He threw two picks and he made one bad decision. And he had a couple that were close, but they were scrambling for his life, just trying to get the ball away. I mean, 51, their linebacker, had a couple plays on the ball that he could have intercepted, plus the one. The pick to him later in the game, I think it was third quarter, that was just bad. That was terrible. Right. Terrible pick. First pick that he threw on, looked like a slant to Baldwin. Corner just jumped that perfectly. I mean, much like the play that should not be talked about, really timed it up just perfect and ended up with the interception. That's a ball you throw 9 times. Yeah, that's a ball you throw 10 times out of 10.
Right.
I have no problems with that. The rest of it, he was using his legs a lot because I felt like he really had to. I mean, the right side was getting beat with regularity quickly. And so he was trying to get out there with his legs and make something happen. It's our offense now. Snap the ball to Russell and like let him do something. That's our offense.
The one thing that just seemed off to me, it just seemed maybe his decision making was a little bit slow. And maybe everybody just seemed a little bit slow in those first couple quarters with the rain and the cold. Maybe that's the thing that stood out to me as to what Wilson's issue may have been. But it something just it didn't seem right to me.
Huh. I didn't get that sense at all. I thought he played actually a pretty darn good game, you know, considering the circumstances, and really carried the offense for the little bit that they were able to accomplish. I mean, they did put up over 400 yards of offense, and he did run for, what was it, 70-odd yards just himself?
Yeah, once again, the leading rusher for the team. They were planning on featuring Eddie Lacy in this game. He goes down to a groin-ish.
That's a bummer.
A groin strain early. I know, Adam, you are super super bummed about that. But yeah. Thomas Rawls comes in, gets 4.3 yards per carry, actually has a pretty decent game.
Had a nice nice reception down the sideline for big gain.
Yeah, Eddie Lacy did have a nice reception in this game, too.
Dude, you can't tell me you watched those two backs throughout that game and couldn't see a clear difference.
We've talked about there being a difference, and we talked about why this may have been Eddie Lacy's last chance, and it may have been his last chance. So we're going to see Thomas Rawls.
Has never given that job back.
We're going to see Thomas Rawls in this game against the Cardinals.
Finally, here it is. It is time. This is where Thomas Rawls takes his job by the throat and makes it his. He just puts a stranglehold on it, man. He ain't giving this up. Short of getting hurt, it's Thomas Rawls the rest of the year, man. He looked explosive. He was decisive. He found the right holes. Was played well out of the backfield. Pass protected very well. Just a superior back in every way.
I still don't know if he's going to catch Russell Wilson with his 271 yards rushing, but with Thomas Rawls sitting at 98, he should at least be able to pass Chris Carson and become the top running back by the end of the season.
There's eight more games in this season, man. We're only halfway through. This is just when the Seahawks start to crank things up every year. This is the beginning of the... We're 5-3?
5-3.
Okay. That's a darn good record.
It's okay. It should be better.
If you don't have zero losses, yes, it should be better. Like, you can say that about every... Is there one team with zero losses right now?
There's no teams with zero losses, but this team should be...
So every team should be better.
You can't look at this past game and say that the Seahawks should not be 6-2. Because just like last year, when they lost on the road against the Arizona Cardinals in a 6-6 tie, a game that was lost because of Steven Hauschka not being able to make a field goal at the end of the game, Blair Walsh had three opportunities, and... maybe two out of those three, I give him a pass on and say, oh, well, with the weather and the way the wind, really one, but maybe two. And he definitely should have made at least one of those three. And that it's what inspires emails like the one from Eric Valdez that says that was a horrible fucking game by the Seahawks. We had opportunities to win that game, but we couldn't get it done. I can't see this team going to a Super Bowl when we can't even beat the Redskins. Rams will probably win the NFC West.
Oh, man. Well, here's the thing. So you just mentioned it should be better, right? And Eric just said, you know, like you had the opportunities here in this game and they should have won it. Yes, absolutely. Look, out of all the problems in the world to have in your football team, I want a football team that is clearly the better team on the field and has some very defined things that they can correct that are correctable to become the team that we all know that they are, rather than being a fan of a team that is, say, like, oh, let's pick somebody at random, like the Niners, let's say, where they go out there and they're as good as their record should be. All right, they're as good as their record is. Like, there's no getting better. They're just a bad team.
Yeah.
This is not a bad team. They had... The way I thought about this game, Brandon, have you ever just looked at somebody after you've done something and you look at them and you know it was stupid and you just look at the other person and go, sometimes I do dumb things. Like, you just know that, like, I'm a smart enough guy. I'm fairly intelligent. Like, I don't do a lot, but sometimes I just do dumb things. Like this weekend, I was putting in a wood stove in my little cabin, have it on the back of a trailer. It's not hooked up to the car, so the trailer can just teeter, right?
Sure.
Back the trailer up to the, push the trailer up to the porch. Get up on top of the trailer and I'm sliding it back towards the back of the trailer. Well, hey, numbnuts, when that 300-pound stove gets to the back of the trailer, the whole thing is going to rotate and go so the back end tips down and that stove is going to slide down on snow and ice and pin your leg against the freaking deck of the cabin, which is what happened to me. Freaking hurt. But you know what? Sometimes I just do dumb things. Yeah. And that's how it felt with this team. This whole entire game, I felt like they could all just look at the fans and be like, I know, like, sometimes I just do dumb things.
Well, Pete Carroll had that look when Jimmy Graham had his false start. You could tell he was, and pre-snap penalties, like, we get on Pete Carroll and the Seahawks about penalties being an issue. And for the most part, Carroll is okay with a certain amount of penalties. That's why this team is one of the top penalized teams in the league. And the same reason why he's okay with guys maybe getting into it a little bit on the sidelines. He wants his players to push it to so they can get the maximum out of their potential. But it's the pre-snap penalties that really, and I think offensive pre-snap penalties, like the Michael Bennett stuff, I feel like that's just a comedy at this point, because he has to get his offside, his one offside penalty. He has to get it out of the way. And although he's below pace for the season, which I was surprised to see, but it definitely to me was the penalties. Brett and Sydney, he had another email here, says tough loss for the Hawks on Sunday. There's lots of blame to go around for this loss, including a bad day for Russell Wilson. The elephant in the room, however, is the three missed field goals by Blair Walsh. The decision to not pay Steven Hauschka has come back to bite them big time and probably cost them the number one seed this year, if not a spot in the playoffs. I have no idea why you would move on an experienced kicker to save $500,000 on the salary cap. Would appreciate your thoughts, gents, and go Hawks. From Brett, Sydney.
Go Hawks, Brett. You know, I think that when you ask, you know, to save the $500,000 against the cap, right? $500,000. Well, some of that has gone to bringing in somebody like Dwight Freeney, and some of that has gone into bringing in somebody like Dwayne Brown and Sheldon Richardson.
Yeah.
Like, there are big moves made, and you, it's just like when you're managing a household's income. I mean, the little things add up. And so, yes, you try to skip a little bit at the kicker position. What does that mean that yesterday or Sunday was excusable by Blair Walsh by any stretch? No, that's pretty horrific. And it was pretty clear too, what the deal was. I mean, I don't know about you, Brandon, but you know, I feel like when I was watching him swing and just the way the path that he took at the ball and the way that he was taking a swipe at the ball there, it really looked like he's coming over the top and like just trying to hit it too hard to try to get the ball through the uprights faster so it can't tail off. He's muscling up. He's coming over the top. I'm pulling him, man. It's just like a golf swing. Mm-hmm. Like once you start spraying him around a little bit, you start trying a little harder. You grip the club a little tighter. You get up to the top of your backswing. As you're coming down, you let the right elbow come out. You don't hit out towards first base. You come over the top and boom, off to the left to begin with snap hook, and you're out in the woods, you know, with a chainsaw trying to find your freaking ball. That's what's happening to Blair Walsh. You could see it in his eyes, man. He's got the hooks.
And it's a mental thing, too, because once you get it in your mind, then you start telling yourself, okay, don't hook this one. You know, tuck that elbow in. Don't hook it. Tuck it in.
Right.
And like with your golf swing, obviously he doesn't need his elbow for his kicks. But whatever mechanism that a kicker needs to remember to keep that path correct.
Right.
That's what has got to be going through his mind as he's kicking. And it's giving him the problems.
Think of it like a baseball diamond. Think of it like a baseball diamond. Like when he's sitting at home plate there kicking his field goal, he needs to, in his mind, be thinking about kicking it towards first base. Keeping your hips open. Don't close them too quickly.
He needs to be aiming for the right upright.
Actually, what he needs to be aiming for is a catfish freaking middle and knock it through there.
Right.
I mean, come on. That's 9 points. That's 9 points.
Well, that's like with golf, too, right? You start aiming for the opposite side of the fairway to give yourself room, and you make it that much worse.
Yeah, when I miss, I usually miss right playing golf.
Yeah.
So I'll think in my head all the time, aim left, hit right.
Yeah.
Like, all right, I'm just going to play for the fact that I can't get my hands around in time.
Way to the right.
Way to the right. You start opening up even way further because you don't trust that you're aiming all the way over here.
Right.
You're like, oh, if I actually hit it where I'm aiming, that's going to be a bad day. It gets in your head, man. Like, yeah, I fully expect him to go ahead and get his head cleared out and come back on Thursday and have a good performance. I honestly think that he will. I think he'll look at the tape. I think he'll be able to flush this, get it out of the system now. He'd only missed one field goal all year coming up to that.
Right.
Again, 2 years in a row, a kicker has cost us a game.
And I'm still willing to give Blair Walsh a chance in this. I knew going into the season, we talked about it when Blair Walsh was the kicker, that yes, right. if he's going to be our guy going into the season, there will be a point in the season where you say Blair Walsh cost us that game. And now we have that game out of the way, and hopefully that's it.
Yeah, you hope it doesn't end up in Buccaneers territory, right? Where a kicker blows 3-4 games for you right. in a season.
Right.
He could spiral out of control. I just don't know what the other options are. I don't know who's
There's
all
There's not
out there.
A lot of good options out there. Dan Carpenter's still out there, but he's...
Sign him tomorrow. Do it.
He kicked Richard Sherman, though, in the chest in the game one time. Like, that's
Look,
almost...
I'm ready to bury the hatchet. I'm ready okay. to bury the hatchet and bring in the former Montana Grizzly to come save our kicking season.
Well, he's on our radar. Mm-hmm. I'll ride with Blair a little longer, though.
Dude, I don't know. That close-up when he kicked the second one of his face just before he kicked the second one.
Yeah.
That wasn't inspiring confidence. That did not inspire confidence to look on his face before he kicked that.
And so that's why when it came down to the end of the game, after the Seahawks, they get the touchdown to Doug Baldwin, gets way behind the defense. That's why at that point, the decision to go for one versus to go for two. I understand the decision to go for two because then you're up by 6 points. Now you're forcing the other team. If they happen to score a touchdown, it makes the extra point matter. So six sure. points there. And really, what's the difference between 4 points lead, a 5 point lead? They still have to get a touchdown.
Right.
The reason why I would consider, though, and the big reason why I had the problem with Carroll going for two ultimately instead of going for one. If you're going to go for two, get your players out on the field, get them lined up in time and run the play. If you get to the point where you have to call a timeout, your final timeout, you don't know if you're going to need that on. Yes, there's only a minute and a half left, but you don't know if there's a substitution you might want to make while your team's on defense, or Kirk Cousins may just drive the entire length of the field in 40 seconds and you get the ball back with a minute left. You don't know what's going to happen. Don't waste your time out on a meaningless play like a PAT or a 2-point conversion. Take the penalty, back up 5 yards, give Blair Walsh a chance to make a field goal that's in a makeable distance for him. That way, if it does come down to the end of the game, now at least he has the confidence of going, okay, I made an extra point plus 5 yards. I'm going to be good to make this game winning kick.
The last little bit of what you just said there was the part of it that I couldn't understand the most with going for two there.
Right.
Like, it's just like you said, up 5 or 6 at the end of the day. Sure. Okay. It makes the extra point or whatever. I mean, you're picking nits at that point. Right.
Right.
But the idea of getting Blair Walsh out there again to see one go through like that to me, because just in case you need it, I think that's important, or just to build confidence going into the next game.
Yeah.
Cause I don't think the Seahawks expected Kirk Cousins to get a stat in this game. That's for darn sure.
I didn't either.
I was driving over the pass, coming back home. But at that point, we got done right about halftime working, started driving the 5 hours back. And my last spot with cell phone service, I got a text letting me know we were up by 4 with $1.30. And I totally expected, 3 hours later, when I ended up in Missoula and back in cell phone service, that I would have a notification from Bleacher Report telling me all about Russell Wilson's last minute win.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not what happened. Somehow, some way, Kirk Cousins threw two of the best deep balls I've seen him throw in 3 years back to back. And especially Doxson coming up with a big catch from out of nowhere to set him up on the one.
The one that led up to that, the one on the right side, that was the one that I expected Cousins to be throwing a pick. And Sherman just happened to get boxed out just perfectly by the receiver, and he couldn't knock it down coming over the top. Cousins floated it up just enough where I expected a Seahawks defender to be there to pick off that pass.
I'll tell you what, the Seahawks had opportunities to come away with about 3 or 4 picks in this game.
Yeah, Cam had one go in and out of his hands. I think Sherman
had one. Richard had one off his hands. There was another tip ball that ended up in linebacker's hands that didn't get caught. There was ample opportunities to pick off Kirk Cousins. One thing that the defense did well, though, throughout the game, 6 sacks on Kirk Cousins. Pass rush got home. And you needed that to happen against that sort of offensive line. Not surprising that happened, but if you would have come away with just like one or so, or even a goose egg, yeah, that'd be cause for concern.
Well, I think we mentioned it on this show that we expected 5 sacks at the very least out of this team. And so for the fact that one of them was nearly a strip fumble that they came up with in the end zone, and then the other one was a sack by Bobby Wagner that counted for 2 points. Bobby Wagner, talk about dudes that had huge games. Wagner, holy smokes.
Apparently he is injured in some way as well. Was a game time decision. They didn't know if he was going to go right up until game time, and strapped it up, and according to Pete Carroll, felt better after the game than even before. Well, I see why. He played like a beast. He is first team All-Pro. He is the best middle linebacker in the game, hands down, period. Stop your argument there.
Yeah.
Don't even try to give me Luke Kuechly anymore. Good luck. Stop it. Just stop it.
No, the argument now is defensive player of the year.
Ooh.
Who else would you compete with in that competition?
Yeah, he's in the discussion, right?
Yeah. I mean, you have Everson Griffin of the Vikings.
Okay.
Be in it.
All right. Yeah, I'm having a hard time thinking. Yeah, I don't know. I honestly hadn't given it much thought since we're only halfway through a year, but kind of like when the MVP talk starts up last week, the week before, and then coming through right about now, it's like, I don't care. It's only halfway. It's like giving somebody an A in a class, like halfway through a semester, being like, oh, nope, here's your A.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, there's a lot more to go.
A lot more to get to, right?
A lot more to go.
Yeah.
But hey, I did learn one thing after this game. It's interesting. I didn't know that this would be the case. I've been trying a lot of different sauces to eat with Crow just to see how it tastes. And I've decided A1 is it.
A1 is it.
A1
with
Crow.
With your Dwight Freeney Crow?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I ate a full... you may even call it a raven. It was large. It was a big one. Big Crow. I'm really happy to do it. He really, really has come out, and I'm not fully ready to say that I'm eating all the Crow yet, because once the coincidence is twice the trend, right?
Yeah.
But three times, if he comes out here against the Cardinals, which I expect him to probably do.
On a short week, even.
And I'm not saying he needs to get a sack. I'm just saying look good out there.
Sure. Yeah, 2 sacks, 6 pressures. Yeah. Put that in comparison with Frank Clark, 1 pressure on the day.
And again, they're not giving Freeney the type of respect and attention that they're giving Frank Clark or Michael Bennett at this point. I mean, Freeney's the guy that's, they're like, hey, yeah, you take care of the grandpa. That's what they say to their left tackle. You take care of the grandpa, because you should be able to do that. But nobody can do it. Like, give him credit, man. Hey, give John Schneider credit. Give Pete Carroll and Chris Richard credit for seeing that this guy still had something left in the tank. He has been a great, I won't say replacement, but a good plan B for Cliff Averill.
Right.
The defense also performed well against the run. I mean, gave up practically nothing to Rob Kelly and company.
Yeah.
So that was good to see. But yeah, that last drive, man. I mean, that you would have come out of this game, you know, lauding the defense if it weren't for 2 plays at the end. And really, with those 2 plays at the end, boy, that's when you miss Earl Thomas, isn't it?
But they were also, it was the way that they played it at the end, too. They had gotten so much pressure on Cousins all day long.
I loved it.
And so they stuck with it. They didn't go to any kind of soft coverage. They were going after Cousins.
Yep. I love it. I love that game plan. I love the decision. I hope they do it next time. I just hope that Earl Thomas is in the game.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen very often against that. You're going to get home, you know, on a blitz or two. Quarterback is going to throw a bad ball because of pressure. Something's going to happen. You can hold up in man coverage. Shaq Griffin will never get beat over top in that situation ever again. I promise you.
Yeah. When I get worried about how particular players are feeling after this game, it's Blair Walsh and it's Shaq Griffin, because you know both those guys are beating themselves up over the fact that if they just do something a little bit differently, the team comes away with the win.
Yeah, I don't worry about Shaq. I think mentally he has the type of mentality to absolutely pull through that. Not only pull through it, but learn from it, make himself better. I have no doubts about that. I'm worried about Blair's mindset.
Yeah.
I'm worried about that.
Well, I'm a little bit worried how Jimmy Graham's feeling after this game, because Josh Norman, man, screw that guy with a horse collar tackle on Jimmy on the sideline, and then follows up the horse collar with a nut punch while he's on the ground.
Oh, I missed that.
You missed that?
He went for the jewels?
It was right after the horse collar tackle. He takes his left hand and just slams it down, and Jimmy's Jimmy.
Don't be going after Jimmy's Jimmy. That is dirty pool, man.
Yeah, I hope he gets a big fine for that. Have they announced fines yet for this week?
No, but I'm pretty sure the man leading that list is going to be either AJ Green or Mike Evans.
You know, it's going to be Mike Evans. Well, he got his suspension upheld. AJ Green not getting suspended, which I think is awesome.
Good.
Because AJ Green, whatever, if AJ Green would have pulled out a shiv and shivved the dude, I would have said he deserved it, because AJ Green doesn't do anything to anybody that doesn't deserve it.
Look, man, not only that, yes, he's a stand-up guy in every way that there's. If AJ Green loses his catfish on you like that.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what it was that you were saying and doing.
Right.
Like, I saw a little montage of the chippy play leading up to that. It was early in the game even, but I saw the montage, right? Mm-hmm. And it was chippy, and I could see how it'd be getting under his skin, but he must have been saying something too,
mm-hmm,
to get under AJ Green's skin. And a second year player, first time playing AJ Green, you know, talking a bunch of trash. AJ Green wasn't having that, man. I respect it. I know we shouldn't condone violence, but it's kind of like when Andre Johnson took Cortland Finnegan and ripped his helmet off and beat the holy crap out of him.
Mm-hmm.
That was all day I was clapping. Yes, I couldn't stand Finnegan. That was fantastic. And I think this is kind of the same thing.
You don't want to condone violence, but with AJ Green, you know, it's because somebody pushed his button to the point to where they deserved it.
Don't start a fight, but sometimes you got to end one, and he had to end one.
Right. So,
I like that he took him down once, and then I started to get up against it. Uh-uh, son. Nope, you're coming right back down. Puts him in the chokehold. He wasn't screwing around.
No, he wasn't. And when somebody told me that AJ Green was throwing punches on the field, I'm like,
what?
Are you sure do you know who AJ Green is? Like, right. Are you talking about some other dude with the last name Green?
Right. Sorry to get us off the rail on Cincinnati Bengals talks, but, you know, it was an interesting moment in the NFL.
Well, really the story this weekend was so many fights around the NFL.
Well, yeah, it's halfway through the season. It's kind of do or die time to start out, you know, kickstart your season for the second half of the year. And it's important. Like, guys are revved up. They're ready to go. This in the league is so wide open this year. Everybody thinks that they're winning it. Everybody, except for maybe the Cardinals.
The Cardinals, though, they might have an argument for their team this week because they beat the 49ers. They go to 4-4.
Yeah.
You know, Bruce Arians is telling his team, boys, we're 4-4. Seahawks are 5-3. We win this game, we're tied up. We're number two in this division.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what he's saying.
Because it can.
Yeah, unfortunately, coach speak does not win you football games. Personnel do. I think it's going to be a difficult situation for the Cardinals, no doubt about it.
Well, when you look at the talent between the two teams, when you look at Drew Stanton at quarterback, when you look at 86-year-old Adrian Peterson on a short week after carrying the ball over 35 times against the 49ers, like that's the load that you're going to give your running back.
What other choice do you have if you're the Cardinals?
What other choice do you have? It's the 49ers. You should be able to beat them with your backup running backs.
It's still Drew Stanton, dude.
You needed Adrian Peterson to carry the ball almost 40 times to get a 20-10 win?
That's the only answer you have if you're the offensive coordinator for the Arizona Cardinals right now. Look,
I'm going to end up jinxing the Seahawks again this week by wondering out loud about Adrian Peterson and his ability to come back on a short week.
This game sets up so perfect for the Seahawks. Whether Earl Thomas comes back or not, I tend to think he probably will. They say he's going to be a game time decision. If I had to put money on it, I'd say Earl play.
Because then he has another longish week between now and the Falcons game.
Right. Now, as the coach or the GM of the Seattle Seahawks, I would do everything in my power to make sure that Earl Thomas just sat the frick down this game. And, you know, like you said, the extra long week coming up to heal up and then be ready to roll as we head into some, you know, more difficult opponents later on down the schedule here. But look, this sets up so wonderfully for this team. You come off this Redskins game that you should have won in every shape, way, shape, or form. Whether that's if you're the defense and you're looking at yourself, you're like, we should have won that game.
Yeah.
If you're the offense, you're looking at yourself being like, God, if we can just get our own catfish way, we win that game. If you're special teams, you're looking at yourself being like, all I got to do is put the ball through the yellow thingies, we win the game.
That's the frustrating thing about that game, because you take out any one of those pieces and they win that game. You know, if you just make one kick, you win the game. If you get half as many penalties, you win that game. If you make a play at the end of the game on defense, you win that game.
Exactly. And so that team is going to be loaded for bear. The Seahawks are pissed right now.
It's kind of where you want them to be, right?
That's exactly what I'm saying. So one of the ways that you can overcome having the physical fatigue of, you know, going from Sunday to Thursday to play a game is to have a big old chip on your shoulder. All the national media comes out this week after the week before. This is how week to week the stupid national media is. The week before, you had the national media coming out. Oh, Russell Wilson's MVP. Seahawks are great. They added Dwayne Brown. They're going to the Super Bowl. And then this week they lose the Redskins. Oh my God, what's wrong with the Seahawks? Can they make the playoffs? I don't know. You know how many headlines I saw? Will the Seattle Seahawks make the playoffs? Seriously? Come on, man. That's terrible
journalism. Who else is making the playoffs?
I don't know. I'm just telling you what I was reading.
I mean, the question may enter your mind if they're going to win the NFC West still. I mean, the answer is still yes. But yes. That question, I will allow that to enter your mind.
Absolutely. So it's really unbelievable to me the way that the press goes week to week. But now the press is out there. Oh, will they even make the playoffs? Are they any good? What's wrong with this team? You got all those doubters. You got, you know, bulletin board material. And it's the freaking Cardinals. They hate the Cardinals so catfish much. And on top of that, it's Drew Stanton. It's Drew Stanton and no Johnson. Like, this is, it sets up so perfectly for this team to come in and just mollywomp the Cardinals.
The Drew Stanton Cardinals.
He throws four picks. We win 35-4. They get two safeties somehow because Effetti like holds in the end zone twice. Jermaine Effetti with 10 penalties as an offensive lineman this year. That is the most out of all offensive linemen in the league. You know how much the next one is? Six.
Wow.
Six. He's damn near doubled it.
You know, and when you told me 10, I thought that might be low.
He leads the league by
that
almost
must be
double.
Accepted penalties.
Yes, I'm sure it is. Or however they count it. I don't really know. But yeah, I mean, that's more than one a game.
So you're going to say that the Cardinals score how many points?
Four.
See, you should go to three safeties because the last three times the Seahawks played in Glendale.
Right.
35-6 in 2014, 36-6 in 2016, and then 6-6.
Yeah,
each time the Cardinals have scored 6 points the last three games that they played in Glendale.
Huh. That's once a coincidence, twice is a trend, three times a you problem. You're probably right. You should probably put it on six.
Put it on six.
Yeah. So the over under is 6.5 is what you're saying.
For Cardinals points?
Yes.
Or exactly six.
Yeah.
Because if it's 6.5, you take the under.
Yeah. Look, man, this team against not a great Redskins team, which I would probably put on par with this Cardinals team, did everything that you should do to win a football game. Sacked the quarterback six times. Should have had three picks. I mean, just right there. Dominated time of possession. Had over 400 yards on offense. Set up your special teams to nab you another 9 points. Had a drive with under 2 minutes left to score a touchdown. Like, this team did everything that you ought to do to win a football game other than the whole make kicks and don't get stupid penalties.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you bring up that comparison because I think it is an appropriate comparison comparing Washington to Arizona because they both on the offensive line have a lot of problems, although the Skins were down to their backups. They both, their running game, you give the edge maybe to Peterson based on what he's shown the last few games. Receivers, Cardinals have the edge there with Fitzgerald. They have the two.
I don't believe that to be the case anymore.
You don't think
Fitz isn't Fitz anymore?
He's not Fitz anymore, but they're still better than he's better than the number one for the Skins.
Than Pryor,
Doxson, whoever you want to be the number one.
All right, I'll give you that.
I don't know which Brown's the better Brown anymore between Jerron Brown and John Brown.
I'm not sure what Brown can do for them.
No,
I really don't. I'm not sure. I don't think it's much, to be honest.
And then the defenses are probably equal.
Yeah, I think it's a fairly good comparison. I would imagine the Seahawks team to be a little more efficient, just not kill yourselves with penalties. I mean, I've never heard Pete Carroll in a press conference talk about penalties the way that he talked about penalties this last week.
Yeah.
He's definitely been out there when we won a Super Bowl and lost a Super Bowl the 2 years that we led the league in penalties.
Right.
So clearly it's something that he's comfortable with. And I've never seen him go out there and be like, yeah, we're way over the line now. Like, this is we're past where it's sustainable. We're over the line and it's got to get cleaned up. He's legitimately pissed off about this, which rarely happens. Can you imagine like Rah-Rah Pete actually coming in and lighting into some guys for a change. Like, it's the perfect time of year to do it right here at the middle of the season. When you kick off the second half of the season, you flip into that overdrive and you rattle off seven, 8 wins, get the number one seed and go to the Super Bowl. That's what's coming up here, man. It starts with the Cardinals on Thursday.
I hope so, because they have a stretch of teams. When I look at the teams that they have left on the schedule and the fact that they have 2 games against the Cardinals, I expect them to win. They have a game against the Niners. I expect them to win. And then they have games against teams that are, I would expect them to win the Falcons game.
Right.
But they have there's
Eagles is tough.
Eagles will be tough. I still think the Rams are going to be tough. They play us tough when they come up to Seattle.
Yeah, but I still expect them to win that game.
I expect them to win every game, but.
Well, I mean, look, if you, for example, the Green Bay game early in the year, like going into Green Bay,
you didn't have that expectation against Aaron Rodgers, right?
Right.
But you don't expect them to lose. It's just you don't expect to win.
And that's how I feel about the Philly game. I don't expect them to lose, but I don't expect them to win. Like, you know, that's going to be a hard fought matchup.
And then you have the Jaguars and the Cowboys.
Yeah, I definitely expect them to win both those games, especially once Ezekiel Elliott runs out of, you know, courts and judges to go through and finally gets suspended. I mean, I don't know how many there are in the country, but I mean, I don't. What's next? Is some justice of the peace from, you know, Granite County going to overturn the suspension next?
I don't know how it works, but I feel like we're getting an education watching this and how the court system works and the appeal process.
Yeah. You know what I found out? If you have money, they'll never enforce anything against you ever.
You just keep appealing.
Kick the can down. Yeah, you can kick the can down the road until you're 6 feet under, man.
I don't know what Brady was doing.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, he screwed up.
Well, we do expect a win this week. You know, we're in the green. We're doing the green color rush again, and we are 1-0 in the green uniforms. So, you know, we beat the Rams last year on Thursday night.
I'm aware. I think I might turn the color all the way down on my TV and just watch it in black and white.
John Ryan might not like the green color rush jerseys.
No, that brings back some good, bad memories. Mm-hmm. The most good, bad play ever.
Most good, bad play ever in Seahawks history.
Yeah, that was hilarious. I mean, now it's hilarious, but at the time it wasn't hilarious seeing like his poor face get munched, you know, at the end of that.
I know.
And give up the ball.
I know.
But whatever.
Maybe we can break out some more trickery against the Cardinals.
I'd love it. I can't wait to watch BA turn as red as his stupid hat.
If there's one team in the rest of the 8 weeks that I would love to see the team bury, just bury the Cardinals.
Please, for the love of everything that's holy. Like, if you're not going to win the Super Bowl this year, at least give me that.
Just like a 40-6 beatdown.
Yes.
Or twice. 51, because I think 51 was like the popular score last week.
Yeah, score 51, just so that, you know, we can say we've scored 51 just like the Eagles.
And the Rams, because now apparently the Rams are the greatest team of all time because they put 51 points up on the Giants.
Oh, is that how much they scored?
Yeah.
I didn't even see the final box.
Yeah, it was 51-17.
No, I didn't really care much. Exactly. Yeah, greatest team ever, for sure.
They're so...
That week-to-week... The week-to-week yo-yo reaction of media is worse than ever this year, man. It really is.
You think?
It's even more so than ever. I feel it a lot stronger this year.
I feel like there's getting to be consistency with the Eagles being the number one. But I feel like we should expect them to come back down to earth at some point this season.
Yeah, they're peaking at the wrong time.
Yeah.
That's a real problem with the Philadelphia Eagles right now. They're peaking at the wrong time. Can you win the game at the end of the second quarter, Brandon?
I don't want to get into this again, but no.
No, I'm just asking.
No.
No, you can't. And that's when the Eagles are peaking, at the end of the second quarter, right about halfway through the season, right at halftime. This is not when you want to be peaking. The Seahawks have a habit, and it's a good habit, of peaking towards the end of the year.
Yeah. Although it was the Super Bowl season where we only had one loss at the midpoint. But
well, it is better to win than it is to lose, no doubt.
It's so much better to win than lose.
But at 5-3, you're doing fine.
I'd feel a lot better. I'd feel a lot better about 6-2.
Well, wonderful, but you're not. You're 5-3. So feel good about that, because that's what it is.
Do we need to talk any more about the Cardinals and the Seahawks? Do we just expect a win because it's Drew Stanton?
Yes. Please.
Because it's the Cardinals defense not living up to their potential, and you kind of expect that. Now, you do have Chandler Jones, I guess, to worry about. at linebacker, right? That's the one guy.
Sure. We've gone up against the Cardinals when Chandler Jones has been there. He has never been a game wrecker against us.
Corey Peters.
I think he's one of those guys that lives off reputation from his time in New England.
He and Peters are having pretty good years.
It's nothing we can't handle.
No. We better be able to handle this.
We will,
I
dude.
Don't want to be coming back again next week going, oh,
you won't.
Well.
You won't.
Okay.
You got a three leave. Got to believe.
51-6.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
Russ has had some of his better performances against the Cardinals, too,
that's
throughout
true.
His career.
Last year.
In Arizona.
Save last year.
Yeah. But, you know, something that is in his mind. Which ones do you think he's thinking about?
All the other ones.
Yeah. Because he's Russell freaking Wilson.
All right. All right. Well, what do you say we come back and we will get to the second half of the show? I want to talk about my experience in Seattle with some of our coolest listeners and essentially just make you jealous of the fact that I got to go and you didn't.
I'm really excited to hear about this because we have not talked about your trip yet. I haven't had an opportunity since you've been back and I've been back. So I can't wait to hear about that. Hear about all the little flockers and what y'all did out there. So stay tuned for that. Stay tuned for some Better at Life than Skip Bayless and Do Better. Yeah, it should be fun.
And we are back. The second half of the show. Adam, this episode is brought to you by Dr. Jameson's Psychological Services.
Oh.
If you're down and depressed from a recent Seahawks game, Dr. Jameson, a member of the flock who specializes in Seahawks loss-related mental health concerns.
Really? Is this bourbon-related?
No, Jimmy Holman.
Okay.
Dr. Jameson.
All right.
Our member of the flock. He was giving out advice to our members of the flock in our Ring of Honor this last post-game.
During the game? Oh, okay.
After the game, yeah. He was saying, right. I'm here for you. I'm listening.
Well, good. And I'm glad somebody is.
Sometimes that's all you need.
Yeah, because we can't do that until it comes time for the podcast. Like, one of the reasons I don't comment a ton on the Ring of Honor and all that stuff is like, I don't want to give away all the stuff I'm going to say on the podcast.
You don't have enough material to that you can just sprinkle it around a little. You need to hoard it.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Plus, I have to have some on reserve just in case of zombie apocalypse or something, you know? Like, you know, prepper style.
You're a sports take doomsday prepper.
That's exactly right.
Let's talk about this last trip, Adam. And I know you're bummed that you couldn't make it out there. Barry and John, getting to meet them, hung out with them Saturday night. Also met up with Jace Scott and his wife. Kevin was there, who we met for the fish fry a couple years back. Yeah. And then Al Higginbottom showed up toward the end, too.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. A lot of people from all over the world. Somehow I was not able to make it. Very frustrating the way those circumstances went down for me. I really thought I was in position to do it, but had a little bit of a letdown from people I was counting on. Didn't happen.
Yeah, and, weather did play a factor.
Yeah, slightly. I mean, okay, weather played a factor. I'll keep it nice. Let's just say I was genuinely pissed at somebody I genuinely love.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand. Yeah. And it did make it, so it was a bummer for you, but
yeah, I mean, it looked like you guys had an amazing time meeting up with everybody and then going to the game and just all the comments and all that. I mean, short of having a deal with Barry in him being excited about a Redskins win.
Oh, and
sure
he was such a jerk about it, too. Like we just needed a Seahawks win so that Barry and his gloating.
Is he as bad as Jared?
You know, he might be worse.
No way.
I'm kidding. Okay. I'm kidding. Barry's like the super nicest guy ever. So,
oh, okay. I figured I'd say this was some sounding out of character.
No, my brother and I joked like with Barry almost the whole time that just how much of a pain he's going to be after the game to deal with. And it was completely tongue in cheek.
Yeah. You tried so hard to reverse jinx it, man.
I know.
You had a lot of jinx energy out there this game, Brandon. You did.
I did.
You overextended your jinx.
I overextended my jinxes. I hope I won't do it again. But yeah, we had a great time Saturday night. And then on Sunday, Lisa Carlson came and hung out at the tailgate. Lisa and her friend from Maine. Super awesome. Jonathan Colon, a Navy guy who I'd run into a couple times. He swung by too. And the DCH and MCH, we ended up watching the game together from our seats. So
awesome. All the CHs.
All the CHs.
That's awesome, man. Well, very cool. I'm glad you guys had fun. Really cool for us always to meet you guys, especially the folks of you that are in the Ring of Honor, because I mean, we feel like we all get to know each other pretty well on there. That is family, no doubt.
And when you meet up, it just feels like you're
just starting the conversation with somebody that you already hung out with last week. Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty cool. That's one of the things that struck me from when we were out in New York was, you know, when you go to a social event, you have to talk to a lot of people, right? And there's some people that you come across, you start talking to them, and you're like, oh, I'm going to have to talk to this person for a while, but it's okay. You know, you just got to be nice and all that. Then there's the people that you bump into and you start up a conversation about 3-4 minutes into it. You're like, wow, I'm really glad that I bumped into this person. Like, this is a good conversation. Like, I've had, you know, a lot of really cool stuff to talk about. They're cool. They're cool people. Uh-huh. Every single listener that we met up with at the New York game.
Yeah, whether it was Carl Eloise, whether it was at the tailgate.
I'm telling you, I fully expected it to be what I described in the former rather than the latter. Like, I fully expected there'd be a couple of all y'all I met up and be like, well, not as cool as I had hoped. Everybody was freaking awesome.
No, like, you come away wishing you would have had more time to spend with the person that you didn't spend as much time with.
Yeah, easily have, you know, an hour long conversation with each and every one of you. Like, it was nothing. Like, you wouldn't even think twice about it.
Exactly.
So I'm just impressed. The quality of listener. I don't know how many listeners we have overall. It's impossible to tell anymore.
You'll never know.
But I will say this. The overall quality of our flock is unparalleled. And that's why I think that in an Anchorman podcast audience fight, we would definitely win, especially seeing after the folks in the Ring of Honor come up with their little gifts of all of the things that they would use as a weapon.
Some of those weapons were questionable, though.
I get it, but I like the creativity.
I like the creativity, yeah.
I knew you guys would crush that. Thank you for amusing me. I appreciate that.
Well, and thank you, too, for the members of our flock that support the show, because not only are they cool people to hang around, but they help keep this thing going. And Floctimus Maximus this week, the title goes to Becca Christensen for her contribution this week, $60. Thanks to Becca.
Thanks, Becca. Absolutely. She seemed to think that my job looked not very safe, I think is what she tried to tell me.
Yeah, and you said safe-ish. It's safe-ish.
It's safe-ish. It's fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, just don't. Yeah, I'll be okay, Rebecca. It's all right. She was very concerned about this.
And she's going to be out at the Falcons game. That's the thing that bums me out, is not being able to go to all the games, because if we could do this every single week, at home games, away games.
That'd be pretty ideal. Yeah. We just didn't need enough members of the flock to make it so that we can quit our jobs, do podcasting full time, and have enough to travel to each and every game, whether that's home or away. That's not too much to ask, is it?
You can put that on the goal board,
right?
But that may be.
We might both die before that happens, because I think we might both die.
Might.
That's a tall task.
Tall task. Yeah. Also, $12 donation from Jason Kyler Yano at JZ Yano on Twitter.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Says, I have to take all the mother flocking blame for our loss this weekend. Over the previous four games, I have been religiously adhering to a Seahawks gear regimen that had me wearing a Richard Sherman brand t-shirt to sleep on Saturday nights and a Seahawks baseball style t-shirt on Sundays. This week, my wife and I were in the hospital from Friday to Sunday morning without any,
that doesn't sound good,
any of my green and blue gear.
Okay.
Why were we in the hospital, you ask?
Yeah.
Well, because the youngest ever listener to your show was born at 1:32 a.m. on November the 4th, weighing in at 7 pounds, 5 ounces. If you haven't done the math yet, yes, it's true. 7 plus 5 does indeed equal 12. A true little Seahawker. I really wanted to say flocker here, but there's a chance my wife might listen to the episode.
Well, I will still welcome the youngest, Kyler, into the flock.
Yes, Kazuo.
Absolutely.
Kazuo Andrew Kyler,
Oh, very good. Just solid name.
He can't wait to listen to the podcast on this short week in his first week of life. Jason says, thanks for everything you do for us 12s. Kazuo buys into the value for value proposition and will be donating a crisp $12 bill to the pot to get his fan life started off right. If anyone listening hasn't pitched in yet, feel free to take a look in the mirror and say to the person looking back, a week old, unemployed, little, beautiful, awesome, flocking, precious dude supports the show more than I do. Go Hawks. From Jason, Amy, and Kazuo.
Kazuo, your chakra is starting out fully cleansed. He is the next Messiah. He is the next Messiah of the flock, because he's starting out blessed right from the beginning.
The beginning.
Yeah, from the word jump. Like, his life will be nothing but charmed and amazing, and titles will ensue for the Seahawks. This is beautiful. I love it.
Great way to start things off. Jason, appreciate you and everything you've done for the show. And yeah, welcome to the flock to little Kazuo.
Yeah, I appreciate Amy, too, for giving us another member of the flock.
Yeah.
Like, she really, I mean, let's not take her efforts for granted. Like, it's kind of a big deal making a whole nother human being.
Kind of a big deal. It takes a while,
yeah,
too.
Especially a new 12. Yeah.
All right. And welcome to the flock for our monthly donors. We got a new member of the Ring of Honor. Yeah. Welcome to Glenn Travis.
Absolutely. Welcome, Glenn. Awesome to have you there. We had a few people kind of gushing a little bit in the Ring of Honor this last week about just how much fun it is to be a part of that group. Glad to have you, man.
And Glenn Travis is already in on the gift game. So Glenn knows what's up. And a welcome to the flock to Ross Morley in for $6. He got one of the opened up, one of the active 53 spots that opened up. So welcome to Ross.
Absolutely. Welcome, Ross. A lot of fun. I can't believe how many people are now, you know, getting in the Ring of Honor and, you know, and above. That's just, it's really kind of mind blowing.
And welcome to the flock to Anton Thorngren, who is in for $1. We'll be getting stickers and bonus shows.
It's going to be awesome for you to be able to call yourself a little flocker. That's all I'm saying, Anton. It feels good. It feels really good.
Feels good. It's going to feel even better to get these patches mailed out to everybody, all of our $5 and above donors.
Yes.
Yeah, I did hand out some of the I'm a Little Flocker patches in Seattle, so it was nice to save on some shipping and get the patches out there going already.
So last week I was talking a little bit about like trying to get the patch attached to my my lounging around pants.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to get that done. Indeed, they are iron-on. You can't get it done that way. However, young Choi, who produced the patches for us, said that, you know, you should just splurge and have somebody, you know, sew them on.
Pay
there.
The $5, have somebody who is a whiz at sewing sew them on there and call it good.
Yeah, but I don't know who that person would be, like where to find that person or who they'd be. So I'm just I just ironed it on. Huh? I'm living with it.
Okay.
Yeah,
I think you can take it to any dry cleaner and they do that stuff.
How can you clean something if it doesn't get wet?
They have people that don't need to clean it. They just sew it on.
Dry cleaners in general. I've never understood that. It sounds like voodoo magic to me. I don't believe it.
It is voodoo magic.
I do not believe in dry cleaning.
They just take your stuff. They blow a little steam
spray
on it.
Spray it with some freaking Febreze and then hand it back to you.
Back to you and charge you. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
I'm fully convinced. Fully. It's a scam.
Apologies to all the dry cleaners out there who are listening.
Why? They've been scamming you for years. They know.
They're going to let us know what's up.
Look, I figure if I do enough stuff like this, like I'll learn about stuff I've always wondered about,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Or we'll just have a negative review on iTunes from a dry cleaner.
Oh my stars. I hope that doesn't happen.
Well, it happened this week. We did get a 2-star review. Yeah.
Wow. That's the first time in a long time.
Hey,
but we read them all. We read them all, Brandon.
So and what it, do we it is in fact titled, Wow. From a username I cannot pronounce. So it's mostly just a series of J's and D's and H's, interestingly. So it says, okay. It's just so bad. They clearly don't get along either. I thought this was an ironic review at first. I thought that it was some 5-star review that where they were just tongue-in-cheek saying that we're bad and that we don't get along.
Look, I'm glad that this review was finally written because I've been waiting to get this off my chest. I can't stand you, man. I've hated you since kindergarten. Just the way that you shared a locker.
Yeah.
I mean, give me a break. I knew right there. I was like, this guy's a catfish.
Yeah.
And we're never going to like each other.
And it took you this long. True. It took you an iTunes review to finally be able to.
I didn't feel like I was in a safe space to be able to, you know, express my true feelings about you.
Yeah.
But God, I hate you.
Gosh.
Like so much.
Yeah.
That's why you've been my friend since I was 5 years old.
I hate you too, man. I hate you too.
I get it. So one of the things that I do with my daughter, we're a very sarcastic family. You might be surprised by that. But
no.
She's 14. Yeah. And so she's 14. And you know how Princess Bride, like, instead of saying I love you to Princess Buttercup, she says, as you wish.
Right.
Right. So to not embarrass her in front of her friends and things like that, like when I drop her off at school or pick her up or whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of saying, I look at her, I say, I don't like you very much. And she says, I don't like you either. And it works out. Like, you know, that way it's all good. Like, we know what's going
on. Because you know.
But boy, I get some dirty looks from some parents, man. Holy smokes.
Yeah, well. They'll probably leave you a 2-star review on whatever the dad site is.
Yeah. So, anyways, I hate you, man. Just so you know.
I hate you, too.
Yeah.
I also hate all of the people who are on the leaderboard, like PBR U Sirius at 1230, Altris 1190, the Blue and Green Mile at 1190, Rawls to the Wall 1160, I Don't Read So Good 1150, and then really? And then Barry 1110. Oh.
That's too much good for Barry in 1 week.
I know. He's in the top 10, along with Cabana Boys and Jimmy Seahawk.
Mm-hmm. Where are you at on points now? I just got that was a. I can't believe you got in the bonus on such a hard week to get in the bonus, because all I know is I'm done picking afternoon games, man. It doesn't even matter. I get everyone wrong. I've done it for 3 weeks in a row now. It just doesn't matter. And if I don't pick them, then I don't feel disappointed in not getting the points. If I pick them and lose, then I feel disappointed.
So you're just not going to pick.
Just not going to try.
Stop trying. I'm at 870. Yes, I did get into the bonus.
I'm at 940.
There were 18 of us that got into the bonus in the regular Seahawkers podcast Pick'em League, which is up over 500 users, which is awesome.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So we got 500 people going for that. What do we got? Steve Largent autographed jersey this year.
You were going through some of the prizes earlier today with me about stuff we have to give away for the remainder of the season.
Yeah.
And you want to be a member of the Seahawkers podcast Pick'em League. Yeah, absolutely.
The Patron Pick'em League, we have some extra prizes. We do have, you know, going along with the jersey, though, the top winner will get a knife from Buck Knives that's inscribed Seahawkers podcast Pick'em League champ for 2017.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about that last week. It is pretty sweet. I cannot wait to have it above my mantle.
Oh, good. Well, a shout out to all the other 140-point team names. Of course, Come On Reese Train is me. Scary Care Bear, Rawls to the Wall, 16 Boom, Balls to the Rawls, Blind Squirrel, Jimmy Seahawk. A lot of good names in there who are in with 140 points. Marilyn Patapsco.
Okay.
Congrats to all those.
All I know is PBRU Sirius. At this point, you are now 290 points ahead of me. That is in range.
We still have some bye weeks to get through. You got to get into the bonus.
That's why it's in range.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The bye weeks make it interesting.
Well, we'll talk some more about picks coming up in this week's pick show. One more review. We had a positive review, too, from Alan Ramick over in the UK. Says, a great podcast. Hey, guys, from a Seahawks fan in Manchester, England. You have to go out of your way to find podcasts about our great team. You guys are the main podcasts I listen to that make my fan experience super enjoyable. After listening to the Dave Damashek podcast, I believe Maurice Jones-Drew needs a do better. After he said the Rams are a way better team than the Seahawks and has made me decide the only way to go with my Seahawks fandom is with this podcast. Keep doing what you're doing. You do an amazing job passionately keeping up with Seattle. Go Hawks.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Go Hawks. And especially writing that all the way from England. Hey, be sure to tune into the Pedestrian podcast, too. I mean, if you need more good Seahawks information from guys who are passionate about it, who know what they're talking about. And not only that, but these fellas are in your backyard, man.
Yeah.
Tune into the Pedestrian podcast. You'll enjoy.
All right. Before we get into our do better, just one other comment from Gavin in Sacramento said, just a heads up on the flute dance. I watched it, and I do believe that it is a snake charmer thing. Shame on Luke Wilson for mislabeling as a flute, however. This is clearly some form of clarinet or recorder. I'm with you, Adam. Us former band geeks got to stick together. Go Hawks.
Thank you. Thank you. I was glad to get backed up on this, because not only that, I think the tight end group listened to the podcast last week, because during said celebration, they all were holding the flute appropriately, except for Russell Wilson. Still can't figure it out.
I'm not sure what Russell was holding, though. Somebody suggested it may have been a pan flute that he was holding.
Yeah, that might be the best thing you could compare it to. I mean, but he don't know. Like, clearly not a band geek. I need to tweet out Russell Wilson, like, what it looks like. Correct posture for flouting.
But Jimmy and Luke both had it. Or, you know, Luke with the football, actually, as the flute prop. And Jimmy had his hand positioning correct.
They look like professional flautists. I thought that was well done. Yes, absolutely. So, kudos to them. Even though I still can't be a part of their quote-unquote movement, at least they're doing it with musical accuracy now. I appreciate that.
So we had an early do better from Alan, from Maurice Jones-Drew. Time for our own do better. Who you got this week, Adam?
my do better this week is for somebody that I've not particularly cared for the entire time that he has owned his organization. I'm pretty sure that Al Davis, when he died, this said owner like inherited his spirit somehow. Like that one movie with John Goodman, the horror movie, where he like touched people and the bad spirit would go from person to person.
Yeah.
I think that's what happened there. My do better this week is for Jerry Jones of the Dallas Cowboys. Look, man, if you want to know all about what Jerry Jones is all about, just take a look at his actions here this past week. So Ezekiel Elliott, the star running back for the Dallas Cowboys, was then investigated by the NFL regarding his domestic violence charges, right? Now, while he has not been convicted in a court of law, the investigators came back and said, look, like, this is a bad dude. He definitely did some stuff and some stuff that not only, doesn't look good, but warrants a suspension. And Roger Goodell comes out and declares a 6-game suspension. Well, Jerry Jones goes out there in the Dallas Cowboys and in the NFLPA, and they defend Ezekiel Elliott up and down. And it's clear he's a bad dude. Like, I mean, it's just, if you read kind of through the majority of the case and everything, there's enough preponderance of evidence for me to look at it and be like, I think he probably did it way more so than I think he probably did not do it. So Jerry Jones just swearing up and down about Ezekiel Elliott's innocence for the last, the whole freaking season, right?
Yeah.
Appeal comes down, yet again saying, appeal denied. Ezekiel, I mean, even the courts are like, no, you can't overturn this suspension. Like, it's just. So, for the millionth time saying, yes, Ezekiel Elliott will finally be suspended. Well, Jerry Jones, with all of his rage right now, he is thinking about actually suing the NFL over Roger Goodell's contract extension to try to prevent it from happening.
Wow.
Like, that's how freaking petty this guy is. He is in the wrong. All he wants to do is win. Defending a domestic abuser, he's going to try to take another man's job away. There's a million reasons why you could try to get rid of Roger Goodell as commissioner that are legitimate. But because he wants to suspend a domestic abuser, that's now the reason why you want to get rid of him? That's the thing that finally puts you over the line. Oh, I see why. That's right, because it hurts your football team, you pathetic little coward. I can't stand Jerry Jones. Like, he has no class. Look at Robert Kraft. Did Robert Kraft go after Roger Goodell's head after Deflategate?
He could have.
He could have, and he didn't. And yet, here it is. Jerry Jones defending a domestic abuser, trying to get Roger Goodell kicked out as being commissioner of the NFL. Jerry Jones, do better. He's gross.
Yeah, there's a lot to not like about this latest Ezekiel Elliott case. I'm almost trending at him toward the idea that Mike Florio has of just handing it over to the courts, and once it's done, let them deal with it. Yeah, after it's already been decided in court.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, the yo-yo of it has been ridiculous,
right?
No doubt about it. But Jerry Jones is the same owner who hired Greg Hardy.
Yeah,
after he threw a woman on a pile of assault rifles on top of a couch and smashed her up in a bathtub.
Right.
That's the type of guy who likes to win. With those sort of guys. So good on you, Jerry Jones.
Well, my do better this week is for Brian Burke of ESPN Analytics, Adam.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
He's a numbers guy.
And
he should have got things right there.
He's going a little too numbery on us this week because he suggested that the
Seahawks. Not too numbery.
A little bit too numbery.
Too numbery. Okay.
Because he suggested that the Seahawks, that Doug Baldwin made the wrong decision to walk into the end zone rather than potentially take a knee at the 1 yard line to set up a game winning field goal at the end of the game, Adam.
Wow.
Because win probability says so. Because apparently he writes here in his article for ESPN, he says win probability says Seattle's best chance to win the game would have been for Baldwin to give himself up on the 1 yard line, which almost undoubtedly would have led to a Redskins timeout with 1:34 to play, would have been their second timeout, kneeling on the next two or three snaps, forcing the Skins to use their final timeout and further bleeding the clock to set Walsh up for what would have been approximately a 20 yard field goal with less than 20 seconds to play, would have offered Seattle its best chance to win the game. Really? give up a sure touchdown and pin your hopes on Walsh on his scatter leg? The percentages say yes, according to Burke. This is the
guy. He watched the shaky kicker, right? Like, I know he just mentioned it, but like, did he just see it like Matrix style with like lines of code coming down the screen? Or did he actually watch the kicker be the shankopotamus he was that day?
I don't know. He mentions the fact that he's 0-for-3 going into that point. But like you said, did he watch like the shreds of confidence bleed out of his face while he was missing those field goals? I don't think so. Because to suggest that you would rather put this game on the leg of Blair Walsh after he missed 3 field goals early in the day, after you could see that confidence drain from his body, and that you would put the game instead on his leg versus the defense, versus the Seahawks defense against Kirk Cousins, that had shown that, you know, the anti-clutch, all of his anti-clutchness going into the last couple minutes of a quarter. That's what you're going to bank on.
Yeah.
You know, statistics are good for some things, but to suggest that the Seahawks actually made a mistake by scoring a touchdown and going up 14-10 with a minute 34 left in the game, man, do better.
Yeah, that's where you can't trust the numbers guys always, right? They say stats don't lie. Well, I mean, they may not lie, but they don't always make sense. How about that?
Yeah,
that makes no sense. I think the way you phrase that, you know, do you trust Blair Walsh or do you trust the defense?
You got to trust the defense.
You got it. You go down swinging with your best guys, your best unit. Clearly, the defense is our best unit on this team.
A defense that gave up one touchdown and a field goal.
That also scored 2 points throughout the day.
Right.
Yeah. Sacked the quarterback 6 times. And yeah, I mean, should have had multiple picks. So yeah, I vehemently disagree with the Nerd Alert article that we just heard there.
Oh, how furious would have Seahawks fans been if Baldwin would have taken a knee and they would have set up for a field goal and Walsh would have gone 0-for-4. And
this is the same.
And they lose 10-8.
This is the same mentality about the play that shall not be talked about. You know, well, we're going to throw it here so that we'll have enough time to run 3 or 4 more other plays. Yeah.
No.
You know what
I
mean?
Just get in the end zone and be done with it.
Freaking score.
Right.
Just score. Score now. Do it. Just score.
Give yourself the best opportunity. Put the best players on the field to make it happen.
That one.
Yeah, I wouldn't have liked it. I would have rather gotten the win. Look, if it was a certainty for Seattle to get a win doing it the other way, then yeah, I'd say they screwed up. It was not certain to get a win that way.
No, definitely not. But, well.
And I'm not even sure if it's the better percentage.
I don't think. I mean, maybe statistically speaking, yes. But just through the ebb and flow of that game, no. I mean, the defense was pretty dominant all day, and Blair Walsh was not.
Plus, I don't know where you get the idea that being that much closer makes Walsh go from 0% to 25% on his kicks that day.
Yeah, right? I'm not sure. I was told there'd be no math.
No. I'm sorry, dude.
Okay.
But you did tell me that you hate me, so I had to throw some math at you.
I know. You're such a jerk. All right, let's move it on to better at life. How about that?
Let's do it.
All right. My better at life than Skip Bayless this week is for Russian Boriska Kiprianovich. I think I did that right.
Okay.
Kiprianovich. Boriska Kiprianovich is a young man. He was now 21, but since he was born, his parents have thought that he's pretty special, a little different guy. Headline of the story is this: young Russian who claims he was born on Mars says he has been sent to Earth to save us from nuclear apocalypse.
Oh.
Now, young Boriska here, when he was born, apparently he was raising his head up at the age of 2 days. He began speaking within a month and a half of being born. At the age of a little over a year, was then reading, writing, and doing painting as well. His mother and father did not teach him anything about space, but he began speaking about Mars and how he had once lived on Mars, and as a 14 and 15 year old, had been a part of some wars on Mars by Martians, a nuclear war that wiped out their entire race.
Uh-huh.
And apparently these Martians are immortal and can be reborn in different entities. And he was reborn here on Earth, and he is here in these dangerous times with North Korea looming, Iran, you know, anybody else that has nuclear weapons right now, Russia. He is here to warn us and to save us from our own destruction with his messages of warnings. For the very serious and obviously truthful Barista, what the hell is his name again? There we go. Boriska Kiprianovich, you are better at life than Skip Bayless, my good Martian.
Now, the only Martian on this planet is Matt Damon.
Well, that's true fact. Yeah, but he said he used to fly around and go on air raids when he was like 14, 15 years old. And they say he can travel through space and time in little round spaceships. And they would come to Earth in triangular aircraft and observe us and all that. And Martian spaceships are, quote, very complicated.
Oh, so he can't really explain them to us.
Well, I mean, they're layered and they can fly all across the universe, but they are, quote, very complicated.
This sounds totally believable.
Yeah. Well, hey, they said that they've taken the boy in front of a variety of scientists, including UFOologists, because those are scientists.
Because they have ologist in their title.
Right. Astronomers, which those are technically scientists, and historians who aren't technically scientists. But all of them agreed that it would be impossible for him to make this all up. That's what it says right here in the quote.
Impossible for him to make it all up.
Yeah, they've got pictures of him at the age of 11, drawing pictures and talking all about Mars and, you know,
okay.
Nuclear war.
Well, I'm on board. So,
yeah,
I'm on board.
I'm just glad we have, and he says he's not the only one. There are others.
Let's see him.
Well, I don't know. They might be the lizard people, but all I know is a young man trying to save us from ourselves. Better at life than Skip Bayless.
What website are you reading this past week?
This is from The Sun.
I let you go to Idaho for one weekend.
I didn't even read this in Idaho. This was in the newsstand app on my tablet.
All right.
I think The Sun is a British tabloid.
It could be.
That was a fun story. I just needed to be shared.
That is fun.
Yeah.
All right. My better at life this week. Daniel Craig. I know.
Oh, look, dude, I'm already in. Better at life than Skip Bayless. Done. I'm telling you, it couldn't be a bigger fan.
Well, this isn't even James Bond Daniel Craig.
I don't care.
This is the James Bond of the Philly voice, Daniel Craig.
Oh, well, now I'm a little more disappointed.
Daniel.
I mean, I'm sure he's a fine guy.
Yeah.
But.
Well, he's a fine guy because he does what we do each and every week. He's calling out Skip Bayless.
What?
Because Skip Bayless deserved to be called out after he went on his Undisputed show with Shannon Sharp.
Worst show in all of TV, by the way.
But do people watch it?
Supposedly they're paying those two a lot of money to do it.
They are paying those guys a lot of money to do it, but it's pretty clear that Skip Bayless continues to be up to his normal self when he was criticizing Carson Wentz late in the game for giving up a strip sack to Von Miller that allowed the Broncos to get another touchdown in the game. The only problem with criticizing Carson Wentz in this situation is that Carson Wentz wasn't even in the game. It was backup quarterback Nick Foles, right.
He's back with the Eagles?
Nick Foles is back with the Eagles and is backing up Carson Wentz. When they were up big over the Broncos, Foles comes into the game and the Broncos do get a strip sack and edge a little bit closer. That game finishes up 51-23. But Daniel Craig putting it out there, putting Skip Bayless on notice, and also points out the fact that Bayless said that he watched the entire game. So he watched the entire game and didn't even know when the Eagles put in their backup quarterback. This is your $25 million guy that you bring over to Fox Sports One.
I'm available. I know who's under center when at most times.
Yeah.
I'm available for commentary.
Yeah.
For 25 mil.
When you make that kind of money to bring people's eyeballs over to the Fox Sports One network and you can't even criticize the right player at whatever point that you want to decide to troll whatever particular team you're picking on this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's clearly the Eagles. So for Daniel Craig, for having to watch an entire segment of Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharp to find the exact clip of Skip wrongly blaming the quarterback for Philly. He has my appreciation, and I'm sorry that he had to do that. So for this week, Daniel Craig, better at life than Skip Bayless.
I agree. You know, just an aside, better at life is these two teams, the Broncos and the Eagles, matching up with two quarterbacks that have completed the NFL circle of life. They're back right where they started. Brock Osweiler back as the starting quarterback for the Denver Broncos in that game. And Nick Foles coming back to the Eagles, completing the quarterback circle of life.
Yeah. Oh, that's fun.
That's crazy.
All right, Adam. Well, a fun week this week.
It was okay.
For the show.
Yeah.
Not for the teams.
Show was great. Yeah.
I mean, it was fun for us because we enjoy hanging out together.
No, we don't. I don't like you.
I know. You suck.
Okay.
And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.